Welcome everybody. My name is Don Changelov and I'm DP from Microsoft Bulgaria. I'll talk to you for the following maybe 1 hour, we'll see, because I'm totally now lost with the agenda. But I'll talk to you about what's new in Visual Studio 2010. And with this I feel a little bit like a rock star. This is the first time I used such kind of headset. I'm not going to dance, I promise. It's just talk and some demonstrations. You can reach me if you need to on my email later on for questions which we'll not be able to handle, and on my Twitter account. I'm not sure if they are seen over there, but it's just Doncho on Twitter. The agenda for today is quite extensive, I can say. Five major topics I'm going to talk about and we'll discuss hopefully. Although these five topics cover substantial part of enhancements, they are not, so to say, that they do not exhaust all the new stuff in Visual Studio 2010. I think that 2010 is one of the richest releases of Visual Studio so far. And what you see over there is just a short list, a really, really short list of features added to the product. And these features are only about the actual Visual Studio self-use, if I can say so, meaning the single developer. The TFS enhancements are not even mentioned there, maybe only a little. So the first topic I would like to talk about is the general improvements. A lot of new stuff, as I said, more than 1,000 new features implemented. And I just picked a couple for you, which I'll show you, and we'll talk about if you have any other questions following up that. Highlighting references. This feature is an enhancement in the Visual Studio Editor. You may have read or heard that the Visual Studio Editor was completely redesigned in 2010. We have now WPF Editor, which is more or less the reason to pull Visual Studio release 3 weeks later, because the initial release was not so quick, if I can say so. But after that, the guys from the product team made significant improvements. And now we have a quite good WPF editor with a lot of new features, and one of them is highlighting references. Why that helps? I don't know how much time took to read someone else's code. And highlighting reference, which works on both method definition, variable definition, etc., will show you on the viewable area all the mentions of that reference you just highlighted. Maybe I should just mix this and the demonstration so we can see what we're talking about. Okay, let's see now where we are. Ooh, here we are. No, that will not work. Let me switch to different presentation view. That is our Visual Studio here, and wow. Okay, so highlighting references. I say that you will be able to see all the references in the viewable area. Of course, you have to have viewable area in order to see the references. So let's see if F11 still works with this release. No, it's not the way I'm expecting. Anyway, we just pick up any reference after this thing stops building. And debugging. So, five. And you can see it here. As you hover on any reference on the screen, it will automatically highlight for you to be able to see where it is used. This is just some default stuff on my application, automatically generated. And let's go actually to see some code there. Here. Let's go to any of these variables. K, for example. I'm not sure how do you see it over there, but can you see it? The K variable highlighted over there with a little darker background. Let's go to a different initialize component. Yeah. Another feature, which is worth mentioning, is the Navigate to feature. Navigate to feature was existing more or less in Visual Studio 2008, and in 2005, if I remember well, it was actually a plugin, a non-Microsoft plugin to Visual Studio. What it gives you a way to quickly navigate through your code. Initially, I was using, in a previous time, I was using Find All, just typing the text I need, and then I was going, I was seeing all the references for that method or that text anyway in my whole solution. Navigate to now helps overcome that problem. And simple way to issue it is with the control comma. And then you just start typing. For example, button, and you immediately see a narrowed search of all mentions of the text you have. It's worth mentioning that it works, of course, only on actual methods, variables, and it's not working like find all in the solution. However, there is one very cool feature of Navigate 2 coming with 2010, and it is searching on a based on a high on a capital letters. You know that if you go and name your methods as a normally expected, main page starts with MNP capital, as well the class, and the methods, these ones, they are automatically generated and used the default name for the button, so they are not very good for demonstration, but nevertheless, if I start, you see here Silverlight application, if I just start SA, it will automatically go and filter and show me all references which have the capital S and capital A in their name. This is extremely useful when talking about long names in a quite big project. The screenshot here is it's not a good screenshot, but you see here ACM is a cool method of type program, whatever. Another very nice feature combined with it's still, again, interface feature, is the docking window support. Docking window support combined with the finally implemented multi-monitor support is also completely rewritten in Visual Studio 2010. And if before we had, I was always having a hard time when I was dragging a window around and waiting for here to just stick somewhere, very, very annoying actually it was. Right now, if you just go in the center of the editor, you see this thing, which will automatically tell you where exactly that window would go. If I want it by the side, it's just like that. If I want, I can just take the window. Now, for the purpose of the demonstration, I'll extend my display again. Okay, and I can take any window I want and actually put it into my multi-monitor support, and that's the only way to demonstrate multi-monitor for now, since we have only one projector. But you can grab any window of your choice and put it anywhere on the screen. You can also combine that with Windows 7 feature for sticking windows, so you get the idea. It is much, much, much more enhanced than before. Let me get my windows back because I'll need them soon. Okay. Call hierarchy is a new feature implemented in C#. only projects, which again is designed to quickly give you ability to get into the someone else's code. And of course, to see what exactly are we doing if this is your code. Call hierarchy, what it does, it displays in the window of your choice, either on the bottom of the screen by default or somewhere else, in a given method, where it is called from and which methods it calls. Again, for the demonstration, I have to order my windows first. Okay. And if we go to initialize component, inside that method, we can see the call hierarchy of it. Initialize component itself is called once in the main page, and here you see the actual text in the main page. And initialize component itself calls these methods in that flavor. And this is down there is actually the button one click call hierarchy, which remained from my previous investigations, which I can just delete here. So you just go right click, then view call hierarchy, and that's it. As you have seen, if you're investigating a given project, you always get the previous call hierarchy contents, so you can go through the code on the steps and still have the previous results displayed. Very nice feature when reviewing code with a buddy or when presenting something on audience like that is the zoom feature, which is implemented in the editor. Quite simple, just hold the control and you can zoom easily around the code. Of course, that has to be used with caution because sometimes you can zoom away too much, but then you can easily return it back. I don't know what is good for this audience because right now I'm going to show you a feature. I personally do not know how to call it, but we have implemented this. Let me just write a simple class here with three methods. Now, if you at some point decide that these should not be private, you can use the vertical select feature and select them vertically and then just directly start typing. This is kind of useful if you want mass destruction in your code or in someone else's code. But it is very useful if you really want to change quickly some properties of a class, and of course if they're ordered correctly, or if you want to change quickly a methods. Talking about methods, I don't know how many of you have done pair programming before or test-driven development? Test-driven development? Anyone? I can see a couple of hands. Well, still, I think you will like it because what I'm going to show you now, only the guys who did test-driven development will appreciate. In the test-driven development, you first write the actual method. Let's say that I'm writing this code. This is, of course, not... Let's say that I'm designing this new code. In this code, I'm calling a class which is non-existent yet because this is test-driven development. So I'm just calling my class. Then I'm calling a couple of methods from my class. As you can see, these are errors right now, and it's kind of a normal to be errors. With the new feature called Actually, let me see the official name because it's only on the presentation. Generate from usage. And generate from usage, what it gives us is it gives us the ability to generate the actual class from the way we use it. As in the test-driven development, you first write the usage pattern of the class, then make your tests fail, of course, because this class is not existent, and then you actually implement the class itself. So in this case, consider that we're doing test-driven development. I just wrote the code, the class is not existent, and using the generate from usage feature, let's see where it is, okay, generate, and then class will automatically generate my class, but I want to show you all the possibilities for it. Can you see well there? Now it's better, I hope. Actually, like that. When you're generating new type, you have the choice of the access pattern, kind of structure you're generating, and where you'd like to put it. So in this case, I'll just use the defaults, hit OK, and you're getting a new class somewhere, automatically generated for now. Then you just continue with the same pattern of usage, generating method 1, generating method 2, and if you go here, you will see automatically that the system did the structure I need. It automatically put not implemented exception. In case I run these methods, I'll get my exception because they're not yet implemented, and it automatically recognized the call pattern here. So it is void method, which returns an int. Let's see, do we have more for general usage? Yep, alt selection replace, you already saw that. And the demo, I was planning to make a demo at the end, but I think that it is more, it is better if you see it immediately rather than just having a demo at once. Debugging is the second part of, at least of this talk, and the second big part of improvements in Visual Studio 2010. The first thing which is massively improved in the debugging is the breakpoint handling. You can add labels to breakpoints now. If you are debugging something and you are getting lost into the hierarchy and into all the breakpoints you put, except from disabling temporary breakpoints, you can also put your remarks why you had that breakpoint in mind and what exactly is expected from what you thought at that point. It happened many times to me when I'm debugging and I'm having like 20 breakpoints set. Another thing which is implemented now for the breakpoints is that you can search through your breakpoints. And last but not least, you can easily export your breakpoints and give them to a buddy and tell him, look at this pattern I've identified, look at these breakpoints, and help me understand why your code behaves like that. Maybe it is right, maybe it is wrong, maybe it is bug. But it is easy to exchange this stuff. And that combined with TFS, which maybe Zlatko will show later, is extremely powerful for teamwork, because it gives both the breakpoint picture you had in mind when you identified the problem to another person, and then this other person is much easier to go into your mind and see what exactly you have did. Another very nice thing in the debugger, actually, that this is my favorite feature for 2010 release, is the floating data types. It is shown over there. Yeah, it is shown. There is a small pin besides the data tip. If you stick that pin, the data tip will stay there. You can move out, the data tip will still stay there, and you'll have the ability to actually see the value of that variable directly into the source code. That, in my opinion, renders the watch window obsolete, because watch window, you no longer need it. And so far in the watch window, I was having variables. When I move out of context, these variables, they're just stuck into the window, and then they're not important to me anymore. This thing, first, it keeps the actual watch tied to the context, meaning the method or the place where you're debugging. And second, it doesn't clutter so much the watch window. The last thing very much improved in debugging is the threading itself. I'll show you a demo about the threading a bit later on. But in short, there are some new columns added to the threading window. We have now filtering, call stack searching, etc. enhancements. And in general, the threading window is redesigned in a way that you can group threads on their state, actually on any column. And that way you can order your working environment much more comfortable for yourself. Dumps are implemented in Visual Studio 2010 directly into the debugger itself. So it's very easy now to capture a dump, send it to a fellow colleague and ask him to debug instead of you, or just save that dump for further investigation. Considering that you have the debug information into TFS, let's say, you can always pull back the state which you had and resume the debugging on the point you were, or at least look at the corpus of the application, at the dump itself. Let's see a quick demo now for this stuff. Okay. Let's first see if this thing will work after what I did to it. Yeah. I see build failed here. Because. Come on. Yeah. Good. Now let's do some debugging on this very, very small screen. Put a breakpoint here and a breakpoint here. Now, if we see the breakpoints window, actually I remember the shortcut better than the window was itself. Here we have some labels. The interesting thing is that you can have let's see if that will work and how it will work. You can have more than one, as I can see, label into a breakpoint. Of course, the latest one is always shown. And now let's start debugging. You cannot debug if you're in offline mode. Take some time for my machine to start this. And where did I put that in button 2? This is a very short application I was showing to a colleague of mine, how she can make her kid be more lazy, because this thing solves a kind of mathematic puzzle. So here's what we have. Let me clean out a bit the mess. Okay, and now the first thing is the data tips. Coming here, I can see the variable A, and this is my favorite pin. And just pin this, it will automatically go here, and I see that the value is 0. I can pin as well this thing, the other one is still out of context. I can see the value again of 0. Now, even more interesting, I can label this. And if you see it like that, it remains on my screen. As far as my debugging session goes, they're there. And as far as my debugging session ends, they're out. Meaning that they do not clutter you while you're working, but if you are debugging, they'll come back. There they are. I found, honestly, I find this one of the most exciting features of the debugger, because watch window, practically it's no longer necessary. Okay, another thing which I wanted to show you, although it was not directly in the presentation, is the IntelliTrace feature in Visual Studio 2010. Let's see if it is enabled here. IntelliTrace events. It's obviously not enabled for this application. Enable, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And let's see if it will work. Or the fact that this Silverlight code somehow makes it uneasy. Okay, some execution. And here, break call. There it is. IntelliTrace, practically, what it is doing, it is going on and collecting what I'm doing with the application. Collecting important events like this one, access to path, blah, 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 it's something, something. But of course, this exception was catched by the program. That's why we didn't see it. It is recording the ASP.NET events, and it will also record, if you had a database connection, it would also record all calls to and from that database connection, so you actually see what is going on. IntelliTrace features are tremendously useful if you are debugging a strange situation where you cannot always repro the case right on. If you start IntelliTrace and start working with the buggy program, at some point you'll get the exception and then you can see what exactly has happened. And here you can see that I have access to my locals. This is my state at that point. And let's see if that exception, the call stack at the point when the exception was raised, and so forth and so forth. These, of course, are standard exceptions, so to speak. They are expected exceptions. That's why we didn't see them. They were handled by the code itself. And so much for the debugging. Let's clean our breakpoints and go back to our presentation. Another new thing, another new big improvement in Visual Studio is the parallelism support. The parallelism support is again into the debugger itself, into the .NET framework itself, and what it gives you ability to quickly investigate what is happening with your application. In short, parallelism implementation can be tightened up to two things into Visual Studio. First one is the parallel tasks window, and the second one is the parallel stacks window. I'll show you both now, because although just one short slide, this is a very big improvement, but I will need another project for that, so please be patient. Parallel. Okay, this one. Okay, now it's not there. Let's find it in a different way. Documents. Maybe directly from here would be easier. Projects, we should have parallel somewhere. Nope, no parallel. What about with double L? There it is. Something, and this is the thing which we need. You want to close? Yes. This is a pre-ready application I took because I'm too lazy to write a whole one to demonstrate the thing. But what this application actually does is doing some calculations using the parallel extensions and multi-threading. So we just start the application and it kicks off some threads which at given point break. They break into the debugger, of course. They do not break yet as a broken code. And right here we can see now how our parallel execution goes. As I told you, we got parallel tasks and parallel stacks. So we can take a look first about on the parallel tasks. We see that we have four parallel tasks running, all of them. Everything seems okay at the moment. Let's see how the parallel stacks look at that point. Okay, let's see if I can give it more. First, I'll show you that, like that. This is how the application made a tree of tasks. First, it started seven threads. Four of them, four of these threads, are on the same, with the same stack, so to speak. Here you can see, let me do that actually. Here you can see that these four threads, they have the same stack. And these are the thread IDs at the point. Another three threads were started with this stack, but after that, each one of them went its own path. So these are their current stacks at the moment. If we go to the next step of the debugging, we can see that at that point, the parallel stacks, these guys, they look the same, like before. However, our four threads continue their execution. One thread right now on the top of this stack is right here. Another one is right here. The other two on the top of this stack went through some common stack as well, and now they're right here. At that point, if we take a look at the parallel tasks, we can see that thread 1 and 4 are running. These are the IDs which you can match directly into this picture. And these two guys, they're waiting. Task 2 is waiting on the object of type S, and task 3 is waiting on task 4. If we continue with our execution, I'm just waiting for the deadlock to happen. No, we are still cool. And now the stacks look like that. Still, here we have the same situation. And from here, each one of the threads went its own path. And even if we continue a bit more, hopefully we're into the deadlock now. Still not in the deadlock. Still execution is going. We have, however, a lot of more threads spawn, as you can see. And if we go on and on, I'm afraid that we'll hit the deadlock now. You will be able, once this stops, you will be able to see here in the threads window that a couple of our threads will be deadlocking. But I'm afraid that something is wrong with my demonstration, because these guys, they just finished. So, but trust me, the deadlock, you would see the deadlock if it was there in the threads window. Okay. Another thing I'll shortly cover are some of the web enhancements made to Visual Studio itself. Big thing called snippets, this time in JavaScript. There are a bunch of code snippets implemented in the JavaScript code. Let me just load the application which I had before. I think I have, but it seems I don't have it here. No, this is not it. This one. So, we got some snippets directly into the JavaScript window implemented. So you can choose the snippet J script, and then, for example, a function, because we have no function, you just type function, and you're done. All those snippets are, of course, extendable. You can extend them with your own choice of snippets. They're coming with quite extensive preset. Still, if you do not like it for a reason, you can change and or extend it. Another very nice thing in the web enhancements are web.config transformations. And I'll not cover this because I think it will be covered, if it will be covered in the follow-up session. However, two things about web.config. First, this web.config transforms functionality, and the second one, much, much shorter web.config on default web applications. You'll definitely see the difference between Visual Studio 2010 and the versions before. Another thing is web-click, one-click web deployment. It is directly integrated with Visual Studio. You just create your setup, and then depending on what kind of server you have, you can automatically deploy your package literally with one click. Before going to extensibility, I want to show you something else which is not in on the slides, and this is the JavaScript IntelliSense. Before, JavaScript IntelliSense was, so to say, non-existent. Or it was existent, but not to the degree people would like it. Now, we have fully implemented JavaScript IntelliSense in this case. If you go here and just type, you see that A is defined as an array, and you can, where are we, timing? Okay. And you can see all the array-related methods here. What's the most interesting thing is that when I say it's fully implemented, I mean it is fully implemented. Right here you see a short cycle before, which actually loads some data into the array A. Now, if you do this, you will see that in A0 we actually have a string, and you see here the methods of a string. However, if you do this, can you see the difference? These are actually the methods of int. IntelliSense picked up our cycle before, and depending on the content of the array, you can see now the full IntelliSense capabilities. If you go in 2, you will see again the string, because it is a string, etc., etc. I think the last part is the extensibility. Extensibility itself was introduced in 2010 as the Visual Studio Gallery. You can browse the gallery, you can choose extensions, you can directly download and install them into the studio. Let's see now if we have I'm afraid I have to pick up my link from here. Copy. Oh no, we have it. We have it, but we do not have internet, so you have to trust me that it works again. This is just one extension which I showed you in the Visual Studio Gallery. It is a free extension, in which you get these nice editor guidelines here. I'm afraid I uninstalled the extension from my Visual Studio, so I will not be able to show it to you, but what you actually do is you go into the Visual Studio. Let's see if I have uninstalled it or installed it. Go to the Tools and Extension Manager. Extension Manager itself has my uninstalled extension, fortunately. However, it lists you the installed extensions, the online gallery, if it can get to the internet, and the updates available to your extensions. So you have fully implemented extensibility support into Visual Studio. Another thing, if you want to write your own extension, how many people in the auditory have tried to write extensions before? Well, no one. Okay. Nevertheless, that no one has yet tried, Visual Studio 2010 is tremendous enhancement compared to 2008 into if you look on the extensibility model of the product. Before, it was not so well documented. I can say it was not documented at all, but there was some documentation. What they did in 2010 is first they have opened the model itself a lot. Second, the new editor with its WPF functionality is much more customizable and easier to work with. And as a bottom line, it is much easier to write extensions for Visual Studio 2010 rather than it was in any other version of the product before that. This is the sample editor guidelines extension I was showing you. And this is the extensibility page of Visual Studio itself. You just download the SDK for Visual Studio and then with few clicks you get your first extension right out of the box working. And then it's just your imagination. Okay, and that's all. Now it's time for some Q&A. Thank you very much. I hope it was a good presentation and you've enjoyed it.